This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Last year, the New Yorker published a big story by Michael Pollan on the use of hallucinogens to treat PTSD or the anxiety in terminally ill patients. In fact, there's been a lot of research in recent years about the positive effects of a plant-based concoction called ayahuasca. For anyone who remembers a time when your parents might have told you that those kind of drugs will fry your brain, it's almost hard to believe. So when staff writer Ariel Levy pitched me a story about ayahuasca, I said, why not? Ari, you just finished writing this piece on ayahuasca, and better you than me. Tell me about your experience.
You know, one of the things I always try to do when I pitch you a story is emphasize the unpleasant aspects. Like if I'm doing a story in Italy, I try to talk about how it's going to be hot and grimy and not.
Yeah, I never believe it, though.
Well, so this one was a home run because I knew I had something really true I could tell you, which was that if I took this drug, I would puke my guts out and possibly experience my own death. That's what people said would happen. So I was prepared for an epic experience because people on ayahuasca report that they're in touch with the essence of pain, and they say that, you know, they see the inside of their own coffins, and it's all just epically horrible. But then when it's over, many people, and there's neurological science to back this up, that say that the trip mimics the effects of years of meditation, right? So I thought, okay, I'm in.
Ari, you spoke to somebody named Dennis McKenna at the University of Minnesota. Tell me about him.
He has been an ayahuasca enthusiast since his 20s when he went with his brother, Terrence McKenna, who's a sort of psychedelic folk hero. They went to Peru in search of ayahuasca following the footsteps of Timothy Leary, and they found it. And he studied a group of long-term ayahuasca users in Brazil. He did an experiment on 15 guys who'd been using ayahuasca for 10 years or longer to see what effect it had on their brain. McKenna is one of the leading experts on ayahuasca in the world. He's been studying it for 30 years. Dennis, maybe you could tell us about what first got you interested in ayahuasca. Why did you and your brother Terrence go on this quest when you were so young? What attracted you to the medicine?
My brother and I were children of the 60s. We were interested in psychedelic experiences and in their traditional context of use. In 1971, we actually went in search of a different hallucinogen used by the Witoto because we had heard that it was an orally active form of DMT.
We should just tell our listeners that DMT is dimethyltryptamine, which is the psychoactive substance in ayahuasca.
That's right. And DMT by itself is not orally active. It's destroyed by enzymes in the gut. But when you make ayahuasca, you mix it with a different plant that contains inhibitors of those enzymes. So it's rendered orally active, and instead of lasting only about 10 or 15 minutes, it stretches out to about 4 to 6 hours.
And you and Terrence, like so many other members of your generation, were interested in these psychedelic experiences, not as something to do for fun. I mean, you thought you were involved in mind expansion and figuring out sort of the great mysteries of the cosmos. I mean, that was the ethos at the time with these, right?
Yes, among certain groups. And that, you know, back in the day, that was right. We were interested in exploring the limits of consciousness. But as I have worked with ayahuasca over really closer to 45 years, I'm still interested in that, but what's emerged for me as important is its potential therapeutic effects.
In terms of treating what sorts of conditions?
Many possible conditions, such as intractable depression, PTSD, certain kinds of addictions, possibly OCD, all of the symptoms that other people, you know, that the psychedelic research community is investigating for other psychedelics, such as psilocybin.
Gotcha. Now, let's talk for a second, if we could, about the process of hallucinogens sort of falling out of fashion, you know, in the culture, but also in the research community, and then them coming back, our renewed interest in them as a scientific and cultural community.
Well, you know, hallucinogens, particularly LSD, I prefer the term psychedelics, but hallucinogens were very much at the center of the counterculture, the hippies and all this. And it was a time of social turmoil, and there was a lot of alarm, you know, that LSD was, somehow fomenting that. And it dropped into our society like a bomb, and we had no tradition about using these things. The indigenous people did, but our society certainly didn't. So a lot of people became alarmed, and the legislators and usually misinformed politicians, who are usually misinformed about almost everything, you know, decide,
this is
a great threat, you know, and we have to ban it. Well, so they banned it. And that was unfortunate, because at the time there was a lot of fairly good work going on with LSD with respect to treating certain things, especially addictions, alcoholism, and that sort of thing. There was a body of work. LSD was very actively investigated. But when they banned it, all of the research pretty well shut down, except non-human research. It's still possible to work with animals and so on. And there was
And then what brought it back? What was the catalyst for bringing it back?
Well, I think partly people, had experiences. They encountered indigenous use of these plant teachers, and they had meaningful experiences themselves. And then, you know, I mean, certainly I would have to credit Terrence, because even through this period, he was still talking about it. He refused to stop talking about it.
Right. What I hear from people who are interested in taking ayahuasca is that they think it can treat the human condition, that they think it can help them access a kind of peace with the things that ail all of us, right?
Yes, I would agree with that. I had a friend of mine, close friend, who came a few years ago to my retreat. She had a very rough time. You know, every session she was plunged into the darkness and facing all these demons, you know. And
suffering.
Yeah, suffering. And she said afterwards, that was the most horrible experience of my life. 3 weeks later, she wrote me and she said, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. So there you go.
Ayahuasca is Dickensian, isn't it? It's the best of times. It's the worst of times.
It's all about what you do with the experience.
Sure.
You have to go into it with a clear eye. What you expect, why, and realize it won't all be fuzzy bunnies. There will be some rough times. But
sure.
The dark experiences are often, you know, the most useful, because you can get deeply into some of these conflicted places.
So, Ari, Dennis McKenna is somebody who's been involved in this research for decades, but there are now ayahuasca circles or ceremonies going on all over the place. It's become an incredible trend. You've even compared it to kale, God forbid. You had an experience with it in New York. I'd love to know more about it.
You know, I was scared, because it's you got to pay to play. I mean, the purging, as they call vomiting in plant medicine patois, is the least of it. I mean, I think what people are fearful of is these incredibly intense encounters with the swamp of your soul. So I went to this yoga studio in Brooklyn, and, you know, there was it was all women. This yoga studio where we're doing the ayahuasca. It's all very secret, because, of course, it's illegal. And I'm ready to rock. And, you know, there's a lot of preparation. You don't eat sugar or salt or meat or alcohol or coffee for 2 weeks in advance. You don't have sex. You clean out. So we're sitting there, and the shaman, Little Owl, starts playing her flutes. And one by one, we go up, and she presents.
Well, I'm sorry. Little Owl is playing a flute?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then she hands you this Dixie cup. And, you know, I wish it was tea. It's not tea. It's like a cup of mud. It's like a really thick substance that smells...
Is it hot?
No, it's room temp.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like someone has already thrown it up.
God, you're making this better and better. So, okay, so you drink this substance, and how long does it take before you start to feel a little buzz or whatever?
Okay, so very soon thereafter, epic stuff is starting to happen. Like, very, very quickly, people start barfing, people start crying, you know, at first a little, and it's mellow, and then, like, really epic sobbing. A young woman on the other side of the room starts yelling, like, at the top of her lungs. And it starts with, I've eaten so many animals. I loved them. And we're all sort of giggling a little, you know, like, oh, that's a little thing that's happening. But it gets weirder and weirder. The one who's up on her feet is yelling and screaming and sex, animals, I want to eat sex.
So at this point, you're not angry at me at any point for sending you to this assignment.
You, David Remnick? I'm not angry at you, David Remnick, but I am
as such
starting to feel a hostility in general towards all this.
To the Enterprise.
To the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to think, oh, Jesus, this is mayhem. It's not working on me. So I'm sitting there, and I'm having these negative thoughts. And then I start thinking, you know what? What am I talking about? This is not a bad experience. This is hilarious. Like,
compared to what? I was at the Bourne movie having a great old time. How good an experience was it?
Well, maybe it was the ayahuasca. Maybe it didn't work on me in the sense of giving me hallucinations and making me see my own death, which in retrospect, you know, I'm kind of okay with.
Right.
Maybe it worked on me by shutting down my default mode network, which is what neurobiologists say ayahuasca does, which is to say it shuts.
What's a default mode network? Explain that.
It's the part of your brain that is firing when you're not focused on a task. And it's the part of your brain you're endeavoring to quiet when you meditate. And experienced meditators are able to do this, and ayahuasca mimics the effect of years of meditation. So the part of your brain that's obsessing about the past, mulling the present, anxious about the future, just adding things up, calculating.
Like thinking.
Yeah.
Like being a sentient being.
No, well, not quite, because the thalamus, which is one of the parts of the brain that governs awareness, is triggering. So you're not unconscious, you're aware, but you have an opportunity to have parts of your brain communicate with each other that don't usually get to talk because they're busy doing the default mode network work. That's the theory. So I switched gears then. At that moment, the girl next to me, who's probably 25, says, help, help. And I am feeling like I have sort of reached enlightenment. So I, of course, say, I'm going to help you. So I just start talking her down. I just say, look, you're not going crazy. We're on drugs. Focus on your breath. Sit up. You know, da-da-da-da. And Little Owl has started singing, you are the shaman in your life. And I'm thinking, you know what? I am the shaman in my life. And a downright decent one. I'm calming this girl right down. And she's saying, you know, don't stop. Don't stop talking. Don't let go of my hand. I'm calming her right down. I feel really good. And at the moment, at the sort of peak of my sense of satisfaction with my shamanism, this girl leans over and lets loose the Victoria Falls of vomit all over me, all over me. I am covered in vomit. And this is the interesting ayahuasca moment, right?
Because is it?
Yeah, I think so. Because like when you stub your toe, like afterwards, there's a second where you wait for the pain and you think, oh, Jesus. As the vomit is pouring over my body, I'm thinking to myself, in a second, I am going to be irate and disgusted. But it never came. I was not irate. I was not disgusted. I was amused. That was my ayahuasca trip.
I used to be disgusted, but now I'm so amused. Yeah, the end of an ayahuasca trip. Ari, what can I say other than please forgive me?
I do, David. That's how magnanimous this has made me.
Aria Levy, you can find your article, The Drug of Choice for the Age of Kale, at newyorkerradio.org.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.